This is Emily Wright, tech editor and head of special projects at EG, and we're still here and we have a treat for our listeners this week. I'm sort of tempted to say we have a celebrity guest, but I worry that that might raise expectations to a level that even Damien Wilde can't live up to. But we do have Damien Wilde joining us on this week's podcast. How are you?
Well, I'm worse for having expectations raised, actually, but until about 45 seconds ago, I was feeling good, actually.
Anyway, it's lovely to have you on the podcast. I don't think we've had you on for really quite some time. How have you been?
It has been a long time. It's difficult to sum up, really. I guess it's been, like for everyone, a bit of a roller coaster. But I sort of came into September determined that things would be a little bit different, and I wasn't sure what a little bit different meant. And, you know, surprise, surprise, it turns out that it's not that different, really. I've been going into the office a little bit more, although I haven't been in this week and I'm definitely feeling it. I looked at my step count the other day and it's underwhelming, I have to say. And that needs improving for reasons I'll come back to later in the podcast.
Excellent. I was about to say that is a really clever little intro into something that we're going to talk about later. But you got there before me. Well, at least it's underwhelming rather than non-existent, which is what mine's been like the last couple of days. But all for good reasons, because we have put together the next section of the Halo Effect, which is our sort of monthly to six weekly roundup in the magazine of all of our latest tech and innovation content. So hopefully everybody will check that out. We've got a great feature on the lack of investment into BAME-founded startups and BAME-run startups. We've got a great piece on Appear Here in a $14 million fundraise, which included JLL Spark and Concrete VC, and how that money landed in their company account, I think, a week before they shut all of their global offices in March, and how Ross Bailey and the rest of the team is now kind of gearing up to deploy that capital. Really interesting. Never a company to kind of, you know, rest on its laurels or think, oh gosh, what are we going to do now? Obviously, the lockdown was hugely, hugely damaging for a company which is entirely focused on human interaction and real life retail. But things are coming back quickly. And they're now looking at markets like Somerset and Connecticut to basically reflect the fact that people have got much more used to their local areas, which is really interesting. So make sure you pick up a copy.
It's a fascinating section. You've been very, very busy as well.
Well, exactly. Which is why I've been doing very, very few steps. But as I say, hopefully all for the greater good. But you've also been very busy this week. And we've had a couple of, three events, actually, hot on the heels of the Tech Awards last week. So could you give everybody a bit of an overview as to what we've been up to?
Yeah, we've been up to an awful lot. And it's a packed issue this week, and a packed website, if you can have a packed website. I'm sure you can. We do anyway. But events wise, we had the future of Southampton yesterday. We did the future of Cambridge, and we've also done the future of Swansea in the last week, as well as the Tech Awards, which were spectacular. But I think what's been fascinating for me is that we've been in this period for a little while, and there are, you know, we all know that there are some financial challenges around. It's great to see Appear Here really getting on the front foot when retail is perhaps the most challenged market of all. And we've seen some of those Into shopping centres transfer to new asset managers this week. So there's a big shift going on there. And also new CEO of the Crown Estate, Dan Labad, this week talking about the need to pivot. So big shift in retail. But what really strikes me in that thread that's run through those three events that I've mentioned is that acknowledgement and recognition that, you know, some might think that central government has been weak and political leadership has been weak in recent times. I'd certainly count myself amongst that number. But there's a lot of strong leadership coming out of local and regional government. I think you've talked with Sam here about the likes of Andy Burnham, being such a, you know, such an important figure in recent months. But I think that goes down to local government as well. And some of those local authorities like Swansea, like Cambridge, like Southampton, recognise that they need to be the ones to convene different parties, to bring the public and private sectors together and if they're going to make things happen. I think there's evidence that they are, and I think others will come forward. So I'm optimistic that that where that leadership is required, it is going to happen, and politically it's going to come locally and regionally, not nationally. But yeah, I've come out of those events hopeful.
Well, it's lovely to hear you ending a sentence on the word hopeful. I'm really pleased about that. That makes me hopeful as well. But that's very interesting. And that sort of also plays into what I was sort of talking about in terms of a peer-here strategy, you know, looking outside of the big capital cities, you know, not just here in London, but in the States and in France as well, in all their major markets, and really starting to look a lot more locally. Because, you know, we have all been sort of forced to think a lot more locally, as we've all sort of, you know, hibernated back, you know, in the area where we live, and we've sort of had our perceptions slightly readjusted, I suppose. But I'm interested, and I'm springing this question on you a bit, in terms of government and local government, that's all very positive. How do we balance this newfound localism, whether that's our own localism or government localism, with the need to, you know, get back to our big cities? And you were saying that, you know, you've been going in and out of the office, and I mean, I'm sure I'm assuming, because I haven't, but is it still quite quiet in the centre of London? Obviously our office is based in the city.
Yeah, and it's a really good question. How do we balance, you know, what the situation that was, where we all travelled, you know, in packed commuter vehicles of one sort or the other, and landed in a very crowded place, you know, up to an hour away, sometimes more, with this, you know, this idea that, you know, if we look at our step counts, there's another tease, you know, we're not going as far as we did, by and large. And the people I'm increasingly drawn to listen on this topic are those who say, well, I don't really know, you know, because I think, yeah. If I think back 2 or 3 months, there was so much certainty. The office is dead, or, you know, equally, the office will, you know, will return to exactly the way that things were. And I don't think either of those are completely true. And we've run a lot of our most popular content over the last month has been based on the future of the office. And in the Halo section this week, Dan Hughes is talking about that. And I do like his last line, which is to paraphrase, the future may not be completely clear, because it's not. And there won't be a universal answer. You know, what works for you may not be the same as it is for me or any one of our listeners, really. So I think there'll be more balance than there was, that's for sure. You know, and for some people, the future will look very much like the past, and for others, it will look very different. But how it precisely lands, which will very much be an average, if you like, not something that's universal, you know. Again, to paraphrase Dan, the future isn't completely clear.
Yeah, I think that idea of being drawn to people who are very open in saying we just don't know, I completely agree with that. And, you know, once upon a time, that would have been maybe a more frustrating response to a question or questions from journalists. But it sort of feels like anything else at the moment is a bit disingenuous, which is also frustrating. So
absolutely. I'm saying that these are the things that, you know, I'm considering, you know, whether it's productivity, skills, flexibility, data, other forms of tech, or, you know, or client demand. You know, let's not forget that. You know, I think that's a much more honest answer and a much more an answer that more and more people can identify with, actually. I'm not certain how the cards are going to land, but, you know, these are the things I'm weighing up as I, you know, try and get as close to a definitive answer to that as I can.
Absolutely. So it's been a busy week. It was a busy week last week. We're going into the kind of autumn period, which is traditionally very busy for us, and it's looking like this year, you know, despite all of the changes to the way that we live, is looking no different. So we're gearing up for what's going to be a very busy couple of months, and hopefully everybody is looking forward to receiving the same level of content through our news, analysis, products, events, as they have been, you know, this year, despite lockdown and despite the challenging times. But there's something else that we wanted to talk about today, and something which we've touched on a couple of times, which is all about getting out and about, and it's all for a very good cause. And you are the best person to talk to about that. So over to you.
Yeah, so for the last couple of years, LandAid has been running a Steptober challenge to get people out and about, to get people out from behind their desks, I think, for the last couple of years, their office desks, and you know, start racking up the stats, whether walking or running, to try and raise money to end youth homelessness. And it's been really successful financially, most importantly, and really successful in terms of getting people active and getting teams together as well. And it's only more important this year. Those challenges around youth homelessness haven't gone away. Thankfully, there was some pausing to the problem during COVID, as other solutions were put in place. Sorry, not a pausing of the problem, but I think some short-term solutions were put in place there. But the problem hasn't gone away, so it's vital that those funds are raised. And it's even more important that we get up and about. Looking at my own step count, as I said, I've not left the house often enough this week, and having 2 weeks at the beginning of October where I do have to get out and put those steps in, or I'll be letting my teammates down, will be quite a powerful draw, actually. And this year, for the first time, EG is sponsoring one of the categories there. LandAid is grouping different parts of the property industry together, and EG is sponsoring the tech challenge, which I'm very excited about. So I really wanted to encourage everyone in the industry to take part. If you go to landaid.org, you can find out more about it, and particularly, as we're the supporters of the tech channel, encourage everyone in tech to take part and step up to help end youth homelessness.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Oh, I was going to see, I've been turning up my microphone to hear you better, and then it sounds like I'm screaming at you down. but that's brilliant, and such a good cause, and one that I could certainly do with. As I say, my step counter is not so much underwhelming as actively mocking me. Every time I go on it, it says you're taking considerably fewer steps than you did last week. But the worrying thing is, it says that every week, so I'm wondering how far I have to go back before it starts to look a bit more positive. So maybe this kind of incentive will be good for me, and certainly good for everybody listening in, and all for a great cause as well. So
Does your step counter tell you how many fewer you're doing than last year? Mine tends to do that, which is even more hurtful.
Oh, no, that's awful. If I had that function, I'd turn it off if I could. I'd Google it and work out how on earth you turn it off. It tells me
I don't know how to turn it off.
It tells me how I compared to the week previously. And as I say, if even once every few weeks it said you're doing more steps than you did last week, it would give me peace of mind. But I don't think I've seen that notification for maybe 2 months. So it's just getting less and less and less, which is terrible. And you don't realise, do you? I mean, when I was working back in the office, I had quite a considerable, you know, very pleasant walk to the station every morning, and then a walk from bank station to the office and then back. So your step count goes up so quickly, you don't even realise you're doing it because it's part of your commute. I don't know. I suppose we have to get our heads round. Even though, you know, hopefully we're going to be looking at a different world again, certainly by 2021, that's the hope. But I suppose you have to get your head around a very different way of approaching things. And for a while, I felt guilty about going outside to get my steps up because I wasn't going anywhere. You know, I was effectively taking time out of my day, whereas before it would be part of my commute, and therefore it felt more sort of, I don't know, more allowed, but that's ridiculous, because, you know, that's not something that certainly our company would enforce. And, you know, I'm sure that everybody is fully aware that getting out and about during the day is really important for our mental health and our productivity. So I think it was about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, that we mentioned it to everybody on one of our team meetings, and because I was noticing it, and I thought, God, I wonder if other people feel the same. So I had a chat to Sam about it, and we had a meeting with the whole editorial team, and we said, by the way, if anyone's feeling like they have to be at their desk all day, you absolutely don't. You know, if you want to get it out for an hour's walk or whatever it is, you know, you absolutely must do it. But I think it's not just recalibrating going in and out of the office and being in an office environment versus being in a home environment. It's recalibrating all aspects of your life, and maybe some of it has got left behind. And I know that lots of people from lots of businesses have said the same thing, or certainly did near the beginning of lockdown, which is like, gosh, I'm finding myself working all these really long hours because I wake up, I just go to where I'm working, and then I work until I'm done, and it's all extended because I haven't got that time in the day to go out sort of to get my lunch or to do a commute. So yeah, it's important to think about all of these things. And I think Steptober will be a really, really good way of helping people to build it into their daily lives.
It's so important, actually. And I agree with you that we do put this pressure on ourselves and apply these rules to ourselves. You know, when employers aren't doing it, you know, I think we're not, there's not that cultural pressure really, because we're not in rooms together. But I think it's going to get harder before it gets easier in many ways. If I think back to a month or so ago, we actually met in Richmond Park, didn't we? Few of us, which was lovely. And that was a beautiful sunny day when we did that. That's not going to be so easy in November to do things like that. So we are going to have to find different ways to make it happen and make sure that we are getting up and about, because it's so important for well-being. Interestingly, we've got a people committee at EG, and talking to some of the members of that this week, there's going to be a bit of an initiative on respect the lunch hour, which I imagine is happening in other companies as well, because when you hunt through people's diaries for a meeting window and you can get people together, very often the only time that you can see is 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. And unthinkingly, I think it gets pounced upon. So it's very easy to lose your day. So I think the more we can do things like that, and the more we can use that time to get up from our desks and go for a walk and take some fresh air, or even if it's perhaps underneath an umbrella as we go forward, it is going to be it is so important to state the obvious.
So there you go, advice from Damien Wilde himself. Make sure you've all got a good sturdy umbrella. Don't book meetings in lunch hours, and everybody should get out and about, whatever the weather.
I think that's a very good
approach, actually. And actually, you know, you mentioned that day in Richmond Park. I think that was 33 or 34 degrees. It was one of the hottest days of the year. And actually, I have to say, I prefer to walk in the rain and the wind than I would in that kind of dry heat. It was like sort of trekking across a safari, and not a very good safari. All we saw were deer, but still.
You're wearing a very sturdy pair of walking shoes, I remember, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was it. Bejeweled flip-flops, wasn't it? Yeah, that sounds about right. Well, Damien, thank you so much for joining me. It's been lovely to catch up. So many weeks and months have gone by. And everything's been, as you say, a bit of a roller coaster, and I'm sure it will continue. But it's great to have a chat and find out about everything that we've been up to. And also, as you say, feel a bit hopeful, because there's nothing quite like a bit of hope to get us through difficult and challenging times. So thanks very much for joining me, and I hope your lunch hours remain free. I know they won't, but here's hoping. And we'll talk to you very soon. And for all of our listeners, we'll be back with We're Still Here next week.